Every February, we observe American Heart Month, a perfect time to refocus on staying heart healthy and giving this important organ the attention it deserves. Your heart is one of the hardest working and at the same time, most vulnerable muscles in your body. Maintaining good heart health and ensuring that your heart has what it needs to keep ticking properly can help you add years to your life. That's the topic of today's Voice of the Public. We'll be joined by cardiologist Dr. Udit Bhatnagar and Memorial Medical Center Cath Lab Manager Hector Salas. They'll be happy to take your questions about heart health while we have a little ticker talk on KRWG Public Media. Call 575-646-2212 with your questions for Dr. Bhatnagar and Mr. Salas next, right after NPR News. Good afternoon. It's 106 and time for Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. This is Casey Counts and February is Heart Month and today is February 26th. So we didn't want to let the month get away without talking about your ticker. It's a little ticker talk on Voice of the Public this afternoon with KRWG Public Media. And we are joined this afternoon by cardiologist Dr. Udit Bhatnagar. Good afternoon and welcome to KRWG.
Thank you.
And we also have on the line the cath lab manager at Memorial Medical Center, Hector Salas. Welcome to KRWG, Hector. Good to see you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And if you are following along on Facebook and watching our Zoom session as we go through this hour, you will see Dr. Bhatnagar and Mr. Salas are sitting. They're spread a bit apart, but they might be a little bit within 6 feet so that they could get in the same shot. They are not wearing their masks, and it is because they are, of course, as medical professionals, both fully vaccinated. So first of all, we're so glad that you were both able to get your full vaccinations, and I'm waiting anxiously for mine, of course, but because I'm so young and healthy, I'm way down on the list. But we're going to talk a little bit about, over the course of the hour, whatever's on your mind, by the way, regarding your heart. 575-646-2212. That's 575-646-2212. Call in with your questions. We are happy to hear from you. So, Dr. Bhatnagar, let's start with a little bit of an introduction of yourself and what you do here in the community. And an introduction to the heart itself. Go ahead.
So, yeah, thanks. Thanks for this opportunity to come on your show. My name is Udit Bhatnagar. I'm relatively new to this community. I've moved to Las Cruces about eight months back. I'm a cardiologist, and mostly I've been in the Midwest. San Antonio was my last stop, and now I'm here. And I'm glad to be part of the Memorial Medical Center cardiovascular team. About the heart, what can I help answer about the heart? There are so many issues, and especially with COVID, I'm sure there are many questions that everybody has about how it can affect the heart in heart health in general.
In other words, it's hard to know exactly where to begin, right?
Correct.
So, for the average listener, obviously our listeners are very well-educated people, but very well-educated people sometimes don't have a lot of education about what's going on inside their own bodies. So first of all, why don't you tell us about what are some of the things that people should be aware of regarding their heart and some of the basic things that people should know and should look for in terms of maybe when things aren't right?
Right. So, heart, as we know, it's one of the main organs of the body. It pumps blood around around and gets blood flow to the different organs, and that's why it's one of the most important organs. There are arteries that get blood flow to the heart also, which are called coronary arteries. And coronary artery and the heart itself, those two can have issues as we age, and if we have certain risk factors like high blood pressure, diabetes, increased cholesterol, smoking, all of those can add risk for developing various diseases, and we can talk about them in more details.
We certainly will do that. Mr. Salas, as the cath lab manager, what is your role in all of this?
So, again, thank you for having me. My role is to make sure that Dr. Bhatnagar has everything he needs to perform his procedures. So I am the manager at Memorial Medical Center. I make sure that all the cath lab staff, whether it be the nurses or the techs, everything is staffed properly. There's the proper equipment from a simple wire to a simple catheter that is needed to take care of our patients. So I work very closely with Dr. Bhatnagar to make sure he has everything he needs. If he needs something, another equipment, I work hard to get it in to make sure we provide the proper care to the community.
Those tiny little cameras?
The little cameras, yeah. Well, there's cameras, there's catheters, there's contrast. There's so many things that are involved in the cath lab and the various procedures that we do. So I try to get as much as I can for him.
Well, we want to get as much useful information to you today as we can. So again, with your questions, call 575-646-2212. And if you're following along on Facebook today, we'd be happy to take your questions on Facebook. You can always comment there, and we will get to you just as quickly as we can. So you mentioned, Dr. Bhatnagar, the risk factors. And I guess in any normal year, isn't heart disease the number one killer in America?
It is one of the most, yes, it is the number one killer. And one of the most commonly seen diseases is coronary artery disease, heart disease.
And let's talk about one big risk factor being genetics. If somebody is predisposed to heart problems, what are the most important things for them to do in order to avoid those problems if they can? And can they?
Right. No, absolutely. That's a very good question. So having heart disease, as you said, is one of the most common, one of the most common diseases. And if you recognize heart disease early and try to treat that early, we can give the best chances to the heart, the best possible, the best chance for the best possible outcomes in the future. If you catch it early, and especially if you try to prevent and reduce the risk factors. So genetics is a big component to that. It's not the only one. Especially in people whose family has had immediate family, I'm talking brothers, sisters, parents, especially if in those people, if anybody has had a heart disease or a heart attack, especially at a younger age, less than age of 50, then they are, by that, they are at a relatively higher risk. Now, there's no specific gene there's no one specific gene that's related to it, but because of family history, there is some correlation to developing heart disease in general. And in those patients, I recommend them to be more careful with their health overall, to keep a closer check on their blood pressure, their cholesterol, to avoid smoking. That's true for everybody. By those means, they can help prevent and control heart disease.
So for people who maybe don't have a genetic predisposition, but maybe, well, you mentioned smoking, of course, but other lifestyle issues that could ultimately cause heart disease, what would you say those are?
So, you know that obesity and increased weight is a big problem in today's developed countries, especially here, and that has a huge effect on heart disease. Not only does it build plaque, but it build plaque in the coronary arteries, which can cause blockages and obstructions. But it also increases blood pressure. It can decrease the it can cause resistance to how glucose is metabolized, how sugars are metabolized in the body, and cause what's called as insulin resistance. And all of those things together can all of those will heighten the risk of not only heart disease, but other diseases like stroke and diabetes in the future too. So controlling lifestyle changes are very important. Having a healthy lifestyle in which you keep active, exercise a few days a week at least, decreasing your saturated fats and trans fatty acids consumption, and decreasing overall simple sugar consumption is important.
We have a question coming in, off-air question that I'm just getting right now, so let me read this to you. It's regarding COVID vaccines. Group 1B includes pre-existing heart conditions, and does this include VTachycardia?
Okay, that's an interesting question. Yes, so good question. From what we know of the COVID vaccine, VTAC per se is not a contraindication, or the only major contraindications to a COVID-19 vaccine is having a previous anaphylactic reaction to a previous vaccine or any other drug. Heart disease, in fact, is a risk factor for developing COVID-19 complications. So people who have heart disease are, in fact, recommended to go ahead and get their vaccination done. Of course, because of this risk of anaphylaxis and other problems with the vaccine, there's usually a monitoring period after a vaccine. They should be watched for 10-15 minutes after the vaccine dose.
Forgive me. Can you go back? Let's circle back to VTachycardia, and will you tell us what that is for those of us who don't know?
Sure. So VTAC is, or ventricular tachycardia is the full form. Ventricular tachycardia is a disease in which the heart beats in an abnormal rhythm. And normally the heartbeat goes from the top chambers of the heart, which are called the atrium, down to the bottom chambers, which are the ventricles. Instead of that, the ventricles, the bottom chambers, which are the more important ones, these are the ones that supply the blood to the rest of the body. They start having their own fast and abnormal rhythm. And this could have multiple reasons for that. We can discuss more in detail, but heart attacks or previous heart attacks are the most common reasons. There are some genetic conditions that can cause VTAC also. That's VTAC, but there are multiple other types of arrhythmias. There's something called a supraventricular tachycardia, which starts from the top chambers, also known as SVT. So I'm not sure if the question was necessarily for ventricular tachycardia or SVT. My answer would have been the same, to go ahead with the vaccination.
All right. Very well. Thank you very much for that explanation. And you mentioned, you know, being active and having an active lifestyle, and of course how important that is for overall heart health. Let me ask, are there any specific activities that you would say are better or worse for heart health specifically?
So for heart health specifically, the recommendation is, and the activities that seem to help the heart per se, not just the muscles, is to increase cardio exercises, which are basically exercises that increase your heart rate and keep it sustained at a high level. And the recommendation is to do these kinds of exercises, and these include like walking, running on a treadmill or outside, cycling, all of those which will keep heart rate up, and basically exercise the heart and the lungs, the cardiopulmonary system. And the recommendation is to do those kinds of activity 4 or 5 times a week, 15 to 20 minutes at least minimum.
Does watching scary movies count?
No, not so much.
Gets my heart rate up every time. I want to talk a little bit now about diet. And I don't know if one is more important than the other, physical activity or diet, but let's talk a little bit about some of those things that we need to do and not do when it comes to diet and heart health.
Yeah, so that's, again, a very good question for the heart. And it's not one or the other, which one is more important or the other. That's why it's called lifestyle changes. The whole lifestyle needs to be directed towards a healthy living, and that includes diet as a big part of it. I wouldn't say one is bigger than the other. And as I briefly mentioned before, there are certain diets that seem to help. The main things I recommend is to reduce consumption of, firstly, caloric reduction overall is an important thing. Here, as I said, in America, there is a global pandemic of, before the current pandemic, there's already a pandemic of overweight and obesity and increased caloric consumption. So very easy to have, to ingest multiple very high caloric food in a short setting, and not only high calories, but food that will increase the sugars very high, which is called as a high glycemic index foods. And so avoiding that and decreasing the consumption of those kinds of food is important overall. The specific recommendations I make are to reduce the, especially reduce the amounts of sugars, simple carbohydrates, and that includes like pasta, bread, all the good stuff.
and of course, here it's the tortillas.
Correct. of course, as I mentioned before, the trans fatty acids and saturated fats, butter in butter or lard, those kinds of things are also known to cause increase the risk of developing plaque in arteries and worsening heart conditions. So those will be the top things on the dietary side.
There's a diet, I think it's called the DASH diet, that seems to win pretty big points every year in terms of heart health. Is that kind of something you would recommend following?
So diets keep on, there's the problem with the diet, all the data that we have on dietary studies is that it's, if you read papers on diets, there's a lot of discrepancies on which diets are better, which diets are not. So one thing everybody agrees on is that overall calorie consumption needs to be measured according to how much you're active.
If I drink olive oil every day, then can I slide on some of the other stuff?
No, again, as I said, it's a lifestyle change, so you can't have two lifestyles.
Oh, darn. We do have another off-air question. Let me get to this because this has been waiting for just a moment. It is 1:23, and we have Memorial Medical Center's Dr. Udit Bhatnagar on the line, along with the cath lab manager, Hector Salas, here to answer your questions during Heart Month, how to achieve good heart health and maintain it, especially in the face of the challenge that COVID-19 brings. And we will get to that in just a moment. But the question is, I have atrial tachycardia. Want to prevent it turning into an FIB, what do I do? And before we move on, FIB, I wasn't sure what AFib, maybe they mean AFib.
AFib.
Okay, so yes, I'm sorry with the acronyms. This is not my lingo. wanted to turning it. Okay, so what is AFib?
So AFib is another kind of, we mentioned two arrhythmias before, ventricular tachycardia and supraventricular tachycardia. AFib is, I would categorize it as a type of another kind of supraventricular tachycardia, although it's much more irregular and faster. And it is one of the more common arrhythmias that are seen in elderly population. As we age, the risk of AFib goes significantly high. Atrial tachycardia is a more controlled, usually not that fast. It's seen in younger people, and it's a more regular form of arrhythmia.
All right. So we've covered some questions on physical activity and diet, and I want to move into now the challenges presented with this pandemic and COVID-19. And a lot of the things we've discussed already seem to kind of come together in terms of common issues with COVID-19, obesity, risk factors like diabetes, and then we see the effects on the heart. Tell us what you know about what you're seeing with folks who have had COVID-19 and how the heart is affected by that.
Okay. So COVID-19, I mean, we know that it has a lot of effect on the cardiopulmonary system in general. Lungs and the heart are so closely intertwined together. One is pumping blood, oxygenated blood to the body. The one is giving oxygen into the blood. So anything that affects the lungs to a certain degree can affect the heart. Usually, direct toxicity of the virus in the heart muscles, myocardium, is relatively it is common, but it's relatively less common compared to the people who present with primary lung problems. If you get my drift, but we do see a lot of cardiac issues that come up with COVID-19. Mm-hmm. One of the most common ones, as I said, is myocarditis, direct effect to the muscles, of the heart. The other ones are we've been seeing a lot of, and Hector can attest to that. We've been seeing a lot of people who come in with these blood clots to the arteries in both not only the heart but the legs, and people with blood clots in their lungs, and that's a increased amount of what we call a thromboembolism that goes to different parts of the body.
Should we be looking for those without some special reason to?
No, so if you have COVID-19 infection, you have chest discomfort, shortness of breath, any of those issues, definitely reach out to your cardiologist, to your primary care. If things are bad, then even go to urgent care or the emergency room, definitely. Because, these things are, unfortunately, young people are not spared. If you see the COVID-19 data, most of the COVID-19 infected people are young, although most of the complicated, severe cases are, of course, in the elderly group. But I've seen, and we both, all of us have seen, even young folks getting severe complications from COVID-19 virus, including, of course, the heart. And I'd mentioned thromboembolism and myocarditis or inflammation or direct cardiac direct toxicity of the heart muscles. But the other ones, one more I didn't mention before is, as we have been mentioning, arrhythmias. So people sometimes have arrhythmias associated with COVID-19 infection also, especially the ones, some of the medications, I know that hydrochloroquine was previously touted as a very good modality, and that's been seen to in some people, especially older folks, to cause increased risk of arrhythmias. On the other hand, there are some folks that have very low heart rates, and especially those on these newer antiviral medication, ritonavir, and the other one I'm forgetting the name, but they have low heart rates.
We had a follow up from the caller who had the question about AFib. The follow-up is, what keeps AT from turning into AFib? And I want to make sure that we made that clear for her.
Okay. So atrial tachycardia and atrial fibrillation are technically two different disease states, although people who have atrial tachycardia are at a relatively higher risk of developing atrial fibrillation. And the recommendations is basically to control the risk factors. Again, there's no medication that will prevent, there's no one particular medication that will prevent it, but reducing blood pressure and living a healthy lifestyle will should prevent atrial tachycardia from causing. Of course, when a person has atrial tachycardia, their morphology, the structure of the heart, it's predisposed to developing atrial fibrillation in the future. So, gotta watch out for that, and closer follow up with your cardiologist, with your primary care physician, would be helpful.
And is that treated with medication?
Atrial tachycardia and atrial fibrillation both are treated with medications. There are some procedures that can be done if needed, but mostly with medications, yes.
All right, I see. I want to get back to patients who have had COVID and, you know, those that have recovered, but we're starting to see so many people with these long-term effects referred to as the long haulers. How significant and long-lasting do you think that their problems will be? These will be lifelong problems they'll be left with. Is that right?
That's a million-dollar question, isn't it? We've been seeing a lot of those. Thankfully, people who come in with these long symptoms are mostly, when I check out their hearts, what I've been seeing, this is very personal experience. I'm not talking from recent studies, but from the heart, as far as if the heart is involved, it's usually very early on, and we know from very early on if the heart is involved or not. If the symptoms persist, it is usually because of chronic or persistent lung scarring, lung inflammation, post-inflammatory changes, we call them. So those changes can cause persistent shortness of breath and tiredness for a long time. Usually people who have, as I said, direct myocarditis or weakness of their heart, usually we can tell pretty early on what's going on.
You mentioned fatigue. I want to talk a little bit about some of the symptoms that people should really be aware of. You know, I was talking to a loved one on the phone, and she was telling me that she is very tired all the time, very fatigued. And you know, it's one of those things where you're talking about it. Well, are you sleeping at night? Yeah, I sleep a lot, and I'm still tired. Is that something that people should be thinking in terms of perhaps it's a heart issue? I know it could be a lot of different things, but would that be something you would point to?
I mean, any symptoms like this, especially if they're new, if they're persistent or worsening, it's prudent to get it evaluated and checked out with your primary care doctor and your cardiologist as indicated. But yeah, things to watch out for are increasing tiredness, and people may not have obvious shortness of breath, but the decreasing exercise tolerance. They're not able to walk as much as they used to. They're not able to, or people may have limitations. They say they have to stop and take a breath, or I have to slow down to do what I used to be able to do before. So things like that, definitely watch out for and get those things evaluated. Of course, as you mentioned, these are non-specific findings, and a lot of things can cause it. There are lung pathologies, heart pathologies, deconditioning, muscular, lots of issues can cause these, you know, symptoms, but it's never a good idea to ignore them.
Well, I think sometimes we just feel like, well, I'm getting older.
Yes, well, getting older is no excuse, I would say.
I thought it was a great excuse, frankly. All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the differences that we see between men and women when it comes to symptoms that they feel when they might be having heart problems.
Right. That's a very important point you raised. Men and women have classically have very different symptoms, and it's not just men versus women. Different people have very varied symptoms. So, and just take heart attack, for example. People know heart attack as a classic chest pressure, like sensation radiating to the arm. Now, we see people all the time who have heart attacks who have none of those symptoms, who come in with just shortness of breath or just excessive tiredness or anxiety. Some of them have very severe anxiety, no chest pain at all, but anxiety, excessive sweating. Those are some atypical, what we call atypical signs of heart attack. And again, nothing, these are very important signs not to be missed for an acute heart attack. And yeah, a lot of people have those these atypical symptoms, especially females. Also, people with diabetes, they don't have the classic, they may not have the classic chest pain symptoms. They may have very atypical symptoms.
That is so fascinating that you mentioned anxiety. I know that a lot of people who maybe have never had a panic attack before have that and think they're having a heart attack, but it can also work the other way around.
Correct. And that's the problem with heart attack and it's the problem with heart disease in general, that it mimics lots of other things. Lots of other things mimic a heart attack, and it's important to let your physician figure those out.
So it's not just the old pain in the left arm anymore.
No.
Not by a long shot.
No, if I could get one thing across, that would be it.
It is 1:35 at KRWG. You're listening to Voice of the Public. And just a reminder that the comments you're hearing today should not be taken as medical advice. You should check with your own doctor with your questions, 575-646-2212. But we are welcoming you to call now and weigh in here on Voice of the Public. We'd love to hear from you. You can also comment if you're following along on Facebook. We've already had a couple of off-air questions, and we're happy to take your comments there as well. Our engineer, Jacob Lockwood, is standing by and ready to take your call. We are with Memorial Medical Center's Dr. Udit Bhatnagar and Hector Salas, who is the cath lab manager. Hector, I'm not trying to leave you out of the conversation at all. You feel free to jump in at any time. You can just roll Dr. Bhatnagar's chair right out of the way if you want to.
All right. I'm just waiting for that time. I'm just waiting for the right moment.
All right. And you just raise your hand anytime there's something that you have specifically on your mind. I want to be sure that we cover all of the important things today that we need to talk about. It's the end of February, and February is Heart Month. And during any normal year, it would be the number one killer. Of course, sadly, that has not been the case now for this last year in the United States of America. And we've talked a little bit about what COVID has meant for hearts, and it's going to be something that we're going to be dealing with for many years to come, no doubt. But I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other ways that we might, and these are questions I have, things that we feel in the heart and ways that we might be damaging our heart and not even know it. And the first one I want to talk about is stress. Does stress cause our hearts to suffer?
All right. That's, again, very, very good question. Stress definitely can affect, it can cause a lot of issues, right? I mean, so stress, chronic stress can raise your blood pressures all the time, and that indirectly has an effect on the heart. There is a certain pathology called as stress cardiomyopathy. So an acute onset, a new sudden onset of stress, a sudden death in the family, or a sudden stress like that can sometimes cause an actual weakness of the heart, which is the cardiomyopathy, and it's called stress cardiomyopathy, that's why. And that's usually because of a sudden release of adrenaline hormone that goes to the heart and just causes weakness, the good thing is that it does, if there is stress cardiomyopathy, it does get better, usually with just medications. But that's the rare part of stress causing heart problems. The mostly stress causing heart issues is mostly because of high blood pressure, stress causing changes in how you metabolize sugars and fats in your body, and stress can cause to other issues of overeating, and stress eating is an important, we kind of miss that often. So stress can have a lot of effects on the heart, directly or indirectly, and it's important to get that checked out and treated.
You mentioned something that's going to bring me back to the scary movies, and that's the sudden adrenaline rush. Can the same thing happen in those kinds of situations?
So scary movies are usually not enough. It's usually like devastating things. Watching people who have undergone a severe stress in, like, who have stress enough to develop post-traumatic stress disorder. Those kind of bad stress. There's lots of cases of people who have been in like hurricanes and storms and have watched their homes collapse or their families pass away. Those kind of major stresses can definitely cause this adrenaline surge I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. In fact, yeah, and don't let anxiety tell you that you might have a heart problem, but definitely get that. Yeah, if you have anxiety issues, it's definitely good idea to get that checked out with your primary care physician.
Yeah. 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call if you've got a question. We are having some ticker talk today during Heart Month with Dr. Udit Bhatnagar from Memorial Medical Center. And the cath lab manager, Hector Salas, is here with us as well. Happy to take your questions on Voice of the Public. And we're so glad that you joined us today, whether you're listening on 90.7 FM or streaming us live from anywhere at krwg.org or following along on Facebook. Feel free to check in anytime. And while you were describing some of the stress factors, I think you touched on an area that I wanted to ask about next, and they may be kind of one and the same. But I know, and this is this community is reeling today with the news of the loss of Dr. Karen Trujillo, who was the Las Cruces Public Schools superintendent. She was our guest. She was where you are now just last week, just a week ago. I made her acquaintance well over 10 years ago. We were in the inaugural season of Look Who's Dancing, the community dance contest, and it was a pleasure just getting to know her at that time and watching her grow into this role here. And getting that news last night, and I'm not a close personal friend of Karen's. We're just acquaintances. But my heart wasn't beating right. I could literally feel it kind of not beating right. And I was wondering, like, is this real? Am I imagining this?
Yes. And as I said, stress can definitely affect the heart directly and indirectly. And stresses like this also are not to be trivialized. I don't want to cause panic and fear by saying that stress can cause heart problems, but yes, stress. We unfortunately are in a culture where we are very receptive to diseases of bodily diseases of heart and lung, and we are very aggressive against that. But when stress and anxiety and depression, those are pushed back and often trivialized. So. Definitely, it's an important consideration in general for health, not necessarily for heart health, but in general, anxiety can cause a lot of disability and could be a big factor to happiness in a long, healthy life.
Right. Go ahead, Hector. I'm sorry.
I think overall stress also just takes a toll on the whole body.
Exactly.
You know, it's just because even if you have a stressful job, you know, like me personally, I've been doing what I'm doing for about a little over 14 years. You have to learn to separate your job and everything because it can be a stressful situation when we're in the cath lab working with the heart. So putting yourself in situations also puts that body in, your whole body feels it. As well as that feeling of tiredness, even being sore, like if you go run, that's how your body feels, and I go, I feel this way, but why do I feel if I didn't work out or I didn't go for a run? It's just, it takes a toll on the whole body, and remember, the heart is a muscle, so if you don't exercise it, you don't take care of it, the stress, all that, as Dr. Bhatnagar was saying, you know, it takes a toll on the whole body, and the heart is affected, especially with, like you say, anxiety, depression, like you were feeling yourself, you know, with that loss, you know, it does take a toll overall. And it's important to, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, control your breathing, learn how your breathing is. It is important to control your breathing, to sit down, close your eyes, and learn to relax a little bit in any situation.
It is kind of amazing the wonders that a deep breath in through the nose and out through the mouth a few times can do. I always try to lower my heart rate and my blood pressure that way in the minutes before the doctor comes in to take my blood pressure. You'll see me doing my Zen pose, trying to slow it down. Hector, let me ask you a question on a personal note, if you don't mind. You mentioned the stress that comes with your job. What has this last year been like for you?
Well, the last 4 months that I've been here at Memorial is different, but before that, working in the cath lab, it's stressful. Like I was saying, you have to learn, not necessarily to be cold, but you have to know that you're there to do a job. So, you know, we know that the effects of COVID on the heart and seeing these patients, you know, for our point of view as staff members working with our doctors, our cardiologists to help these people, help our patients, help the community. We have to, of course, take the proper precautions, but in the back of the mind is, okay, I have to take care of myself too because I have family, I have parents, I have a wife, my kids, you know. So it does create stress, you know, but at the same time, we have to understand that we're here to provide a service for the community. We're here to help people. So has it been stressful? Definitely. And understanding why we're doing it, and this is ultimately our, you know, not necessarily our job, but this is what we signed up to do. You know, this is what we do, and I personally enjoy doing. I mean, a little over 14 years working in the cath lab, working with the heart, it's great. It's very satisfying. So during COVID, especially this last year when, you know, the nation got hit and being part of that first wave that, you know, seeing the patients and understanding the virus, it is stressful overall because we didn't ourselves, well, how do we do? What do we do? How do we react and be accepting of this without having, you know, separating our personal feelings from ultimately taking care of our patients? There was a lot that goes through our mind, but ultimately is, you know, we're here to help, and I'm grateful that I've been able to help people through this process.
What was it, what was the feeling like when you were able to get your vaccine?
Oh, nice. I mean, a lot of people, I guess, you know, you're iffy about it, of course. I was part of it, you know. You become, you know, you're a little reluctant to doing it, but ultimately is it's the right thing to do. And, you know, and when I got the shot, the first one, I was like, okay, you know, you get it. I was all right. My arm was sore. Like, okay, it's like a little flu shot. The second one comes around and, you know, you get that. You get a kind of get a sense of relief. There's kind of like there's light at the end of the tunnel for the whole nation that, you know, it's going to come around if we all do our part to start taking care of ourselves. So it definitely did feel good.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, the fact that we got a vaccine in a year after it was after the virus was first discovered, its genomic sequence was delivered in a month after the virus was diagnosed. It's a testament to how far science has come along, and it's great to be part of that.
Definitely. A lot of people look online when they're having symptoms. Can you give folks direction about what they should be doing, if they should be looking online for anything at all, and how they should be doing that?
So I never tell my people to not go up and look online, despite my colleagues. Some people's opinion is to don't go online. Yes, online there's a lot of information. There's good, there's bad, there's accurate, there's inaccurate. We have been moving towards, in general, medicine has been moving towards more democratization of medicine. You know, when people are able to take charge of their own health and keep a tab on their own health, keep a tab on their activity level with their Fitbits, with their glucose, checking their own sugars, checking their own blood pressure. These are just basic things, but as we move along, we have machines that can check your EKG. We have machines that can check your, you know, heart rhythm, as I said, with an EKG. So all those things will will be helpful for people to take control of their own health. And yes, look up online, no issues, but always check with your cardiologist or your primary care physician, because that's a lot of information on the internet. Not all of it is accurate. Not all of it is pertinent to your particular case. And as we move along, hopefully AI, artificial intelligence, will get better and better, so we can it can potentially give you personalized answers, but we're far from there at this point.
You mean you're not expecting a robot to take over your own job anytime soon?
No, not yet, not quite yet. I'll be happy when it does. I'll take advice from him when it does, but not yet.
What are you most excited about in terms of new advancements?
So this was one. I mean, I recently acquired a machine that checks your, and we know that there are iPhones, Apple Watches that check your own EKG. So this kind of thing that gives charge of your health to your hands, that's the most empowering, I feel. Even as a doctor, when I tell tell my patients that, you know, check your blood pressure at home, don't need to be, because what we do is spot sampling of your blood pressure, of your blood tests, of your heart rate in the clinic. It's not a continuous measurement of how your lifestyle is once you're out of the clinic. And that's where we are, in general, that's where I see ourselves as a medical community moving towards more. As we're growing in big data in other fields, so we are in medicine, and I look forward to that. That's the most important. That's the most interesting, I feel, aspect of medicine that I look forward to.
I think that when I turned age brackety schmack, I was told to start. I was told to start taking a low dose aspirin every day. And then I heard somewhere along the line that we shouldn't be doing that. Where are we on the low-dose aspirin?
So I can't give generalized advice like this, but there's a lot of data out there. Aspirin is probably one of the most oldest medication, probably, right?
I mean, probably.
And there has been a ton of research on that. And there, yes, some of them was done before the age of newer medications. And the guidelines are different for people who have risk factors, who don't have risk factors. It depends on that. The most recent papers, I think what you're mentioning are, there's some newer data about people who take aspirin as you are for what's called as primary prevention, or preventing disease before it happens. Primary prevention, and those papers were specifically for elderly folks, and they did not find a significant benefit of aspirin in those specific studies. But I don't want to generalize the treatment based on a couple of studies. Those are important studies. I'm not trivializing those, but it needs to be taken in clinical context.
Fascinating. 575-646-2212. We only have a few minutes left with Dr. Udit Bhatnagar from Memorial Medical Center and Hector Salas, who is the manager of the Cath Lab. Tell us a little bit about your progression into that role, Hector.
Well, me, like I said, I've been doing Cath Lab about a little over 14 years now. So I started as a simple tech, you know, and I can say I've learned so much. I've had the privilege to work with great physicians throughout my years. And I was down in El Paso. That's where I did. I worked down there. And then here, overall, I guess after years of doing it, I stayed in one facility for about 12 years. And I was the one that had been there the longest. So I was kind of the lead without the title, you can say. Everybody kind of looked up to, here you go, well, Hector this, Hector that. So here, I was reached out to come in, you know, help manage Memorial Medical Center. They looked at my experience and they felt that I was capable of doing so. So they reached out to me back in October. So September, actually, and I started in October. And I got the opportunity, and I love it. It's great. I live down in El Paso currently right now, but getting familiar with here, you know, it's 30 minutes away, but it's completely different. You know, even from working in the cath lab, you're doing the same thing, but just the way things run are the way the procedures, everything is a procedure, but overall, it's a different culture. Mm. You know, I like it. Memorial Medical Center, it's great. I have nothing bad to say about them. It's really good, so I like it. I've got the opportunity. I'm there, like I said, working with Dr. Panaga, getting him the stuff that he needs, working closer together to provide the care that we want to give for the community.
And since you mentioned that, I would want to give out a shout-out to our cath lab team, and frankly, all of our we get a lot of praise, physicians do, for, oh, you saved my life, or you helped me out, but we don't act solo, right? So our cath lab, the whole cath lab staff, our medical assistants, our nurses, I wanted to give them a shout-out that you're all great frontline workers are working with all of us, and thanks for everything.
Yeah. I mean, we can't thank our medical community enough for just what they would go through given this pandemic, but also what they've had to go through given all that it has been along the way, right? And we do have a caller on the line, I see. Off-air question. Okay, I got you. And they want us to talk about stents, pros, cons, and related info.
Okay, very good question. So I'm assuming it's like talking coronary stents. There are different kinds of stents, the ones that go into the legs also. We'll talk about coronary stents or heart stents. The stents basically is a small scaffold, almost like a wire mesh that is put on a small balloon that we insert inside the coronary artery, or the arteries that lead to the heart, and inflate the balloon, so they inflate the stent mesh so that we push all the plaque away, and when we take out everything, we leave a big stent that's holding the walls back and letting blood flow improve to the heart. So it's a very useful tool to treat blockages in the heart arteries, and where to use it is a very important question, million-dollar question that is debated back and forth in the cardiology community. The main reasons we do that is a heart attack. Some people who have chronic blockages for a long time, who have symptoms associated with it, which are not controlled with medications, those people also seem to benefit with getting a stent in their heart arteries. So, that's where stents come into play with heart disease.
All right. And thank you. I wanted to get to that question as soon as possible. But Hector, I did have one more follow-up question for you regarding your educational background. And so what is your actual title and what is your educational background to get to this place where you are today?
Okay, so me, to get to where I'm at, I am still currently going to school, actually. I'm going to get my health administration degree. But overall, for my background, I am a cardiovascular technician. For the area of here in El Paso, Las Cruces, there is no schooling for cardiovascular technicians, but you can do what's called a radiology technician, where you do x-ray tech. Mm-hmm. So for me, my background has been, I was a medical assistant, and I got trained into cath lab. So I got the opportunity, I got trained on the job, simply for the reason that there is no school here. Back in 2007, when I got my opportunity, that's when they needed that, and I was helping, and they gave me the opportunity. So I've slowly grown in, and I've continued my education.
Get your health administration finished, then you'll be Dr. Bhatnagar's boss, right?
Yeah,
that's how that
exactly works.
All right. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I feel like there is still really quite a bit to talk about. With these last couple of minutes, Dr. Bhatnagar, what would you say it is that you want people to come away from this hour with today?
Well, this is Heart Month. February is Heart Month, so it's a good chance for you to chance for everybody to re-energize and get back into taking care of their heart again. You know, if they're already doing that, keep up, and if they're not, then get back at it. There's no one thing to do. There's no one way to do it. We've been mentioning this word a lot: lifestyle changes, and having a healthy lifestyle and recognizing heart disease at its earliest are the most important things. And if I can get that across, I'll be happy with that.
Well, you certainly did. And thank you so much for spending this hour. We know how valuable your time is, and we appreciate you being here. Thank you, Dr. Bhatnagar, and thank you very much, Mr. Salas. Good luck in your education. Please stay in touch.
Thank you for having us.
And it is almost 2:01. NPR News is coming up next, and Leora Zeitlin will have Intermezzo by request right after NPR News. Thanks again to Jacob Lockwood, our engineer, who is answering phone calls and keeping us on the air on Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. This is Casey Counts. Have a wonderful weekend.